The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend Bob Dio, engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. Bob, back with us after... Had a really good week. I couldn't believe the Bob Dio reunion back east. The whole family was there. And there must have been like 100 people at the Bob Dio reunion in upstate New York. It's the Buckmaster Show on Wednesday, June the 19th, 2019. Paul Cunningham, Ward 2 Democrat, is joining us right now. Paul, can we get you to move over just a little bit? I think this is your first time in the new studio, isn't it?
It's fabulous.
Yeah, it's been a while. I mean, normally when we talk to you, you are at school, and so you are off, obviously, for the summer, so we were able to get you to come into studio on 1030 Tucson's Voice for trusted local news and talk. This is also, Paul, the first time that we are live streaming on YouTube. So
cool. Hello, YouTube.
So
Hello.
You are you're back on camera, and I guess this is the first time I've been on any kind of a camera since December of 2010, and hopefully I haven't changed a lot since my days on Channel 6. But anyway, how are you, Paul?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show, and it's great to be here.
Tell me a little bit about you are running for re-election, standing for re-election. Do you have any competition?
There is someone who is qualified for the ballot. Uh-huh. I don't know much about him. We haven't met yet. Mm-hmm. I do know that he's qualified for the ballot, and he's a registered Republican. So I'll have a race, and I'm looking forward to that. It's really important that we have an engaged community. It helps give a voice. And here's the thing: when we have races in Tucson, sometimes in both situations that I've been in the last few years, several different things. Even the folks on the other side of the aisle, or the folks who don't win, or the folks who do win, at least there's dialogue, and some of those issues are raised that may not be within the wheelhouse of one of the candidates. So the candidates actually educate each other, and that's why it's important to have that type of engagement in the community.
You were mentioned in this editorial in the Arizona Daily Star a couple of days ago about neighborhoods trying to improve their own roads, be self-taxing districts. Do you like the idea? I mean, it's not really a new idea. There are some already, right, over by the Arizona Inn, Elm Street.
There's virtually dozens of different programs. I mean, I think there's over 200 different property taxing districts within the county. Mm-hmm. People have different property taxes, everything from putting in speed humps to having their own fire department or own water service. So that's not the new part. The new part is that the city, depending on the type of improvement, the city would put in some general fund dollars and match or partially match what the neighborhood is doing. That way we can leverage some of those dollars and get more things done. The bottom line is yes, we have some bonds. Yes, we're catching up. Yes, we're making progress, but the job's never going to be done. Not only that, a lot of the work we've done is now needing the upkeep and needing the maintenance. And I don't want to be in the situation where we're behind again in our infrastructure maintenance and our infrastructure upkeep throughout the city. That isn't how you manage assets. And our failure in asset management is what got us in this mess in the first place. So this is an opportunity to engage neighborhoods and have them decide what kind of upkeep and what kind of management they want. It's no different than an HOA that owns their own roads, but this is a neighborhood being able to say, hey, look, we'd love to put some skin in the game to try to accelerate the process. That's fine with me. That's actually a good thing. The biggest controversy about it is whether or not we can make it an equitable system. And there are three variables in this type of scenario. The first variable is the number of homes that are participating. There's a big difference between an 80 home subdivision and a 1600 home large neighborhood association. So we've got to identify what kind of match we'd be talking about. We also have to identify a variable such as geography. In other words, we can't just have all the neighborhoods in one part of town receive this matching money. It's got to be kind of spread around. The next variable is income disparity. That disparity is in other words, should the match be the same for every neighborhood, or should the match be distributed and maybe we can leverage CBDG dollars, community block development grant dollars, or look at a different type of formula for neighborhoods with a higher socioeconomic challenge. And lastly is home ownership, and this is another one that was pointed out to me by my good friend Mark Homan, who was also my professor at the Arizona State University School of Social Work. I know I have to admit that I went to ASU on the air, but everybody knows I'm a huge Wildcat fan. But the bottom line is Mark told me that...
I didn't know you went to ASU.
Just the Tucson component. There is actually a Tucson. I actually went to the governor of Arizona at the time, Janet Napolitano, and asked her if he could say Arizona University System master's degree, and she wouldn't let me change it. So it's Arizona State University. But the bottom line, that's a funny joke, but the bottom line is that Mark Homan was my professor and taught me about community engagement and community development scenarios in which communities come together and basically pool their resources. So I got the idea, but he also made sure to point out that sometimes neighborhoods have like a 90% or 80% rental rate where there's not a lot of homeowners living in the neighborhood, and you're going to have a tougher time convincing neighbors to agree to this. So I think there's the opportunity where we could, depending on the percentage of people that are owner occupied, that could change the threshold on how many people agree to do it. By state law, we have to have 50 plus one of the homeowners and 50 plus one of the assessed value. So we'd have to work forward from that. So if you were more than, say, 65, 70% homeownership, we might up that threshold.
So why is this coming up now? And why isn't the city taking care of these city services? Why should the neighborhoods, Paul Cunningham, have to worry about this?
Well, like I said, they don't have to at all. I mean, everybody's still in line, and we still have an asset management program, and we're still going to do it. We're going to get everybody as we come to it. All this does is accelerates the process. We're still going to keep our commitment. We're not trying to shirk our responsibility, but we're also saying if you want work done now and you want it to, I mean, we're going as fast as we possibly can. In some instances, it's not just a matter of funding. It's a matter of actual resources where we just don't have enough actual people and asphalt and workers to do all the things that we need to do. And the problem is that because we keep getting behind, we're going to continue to have significant maintenance and upkeep demands on the city. And so we have to be proactive. We do not need a reactive government. We need a proactive government. I've been saying that for 10 years, and this is just an opportunity for neighbors to say, hey, you know what? And by the way, Bill, it doesn't even have to be road repair. I mean, road repair becomes controversial because it's already something we should be doing.
Right.
But what if neighborhoods want to do sidewalks or speed humps, or they want to do a new playground, or they want a splash pad, or they want to replaster their pool, something that we can't do with impact fees? So these are it's all about neighborhood amenities and accoutrements, and I think this is an opportunity for neighbors to want to improve themselves. I think it's just an example of trying to rebuild Tucson one neighborhood at a time.
We're speaking with Paul Cunningham, Tucson City Councilman representing Ward Number 2 as a Democrat. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Also today, we are live streaming the program on YouTube, so you can check that out as well. And by the way, during the breaks, you'll see us if you're watching on YouTube, but you will not be hearing what Paul and I are saying during the break. That's all confidential material, right, Paul? Paul, let me ask you, I've been interviewing the city council candidates for mayor, and the sustainability word keeps coming up, that we need to make Tucson more of a sustainable city. When you hear that, what do you think?
I think about ecologically responsible. I think about green. I think about water conservation. I think about breathable air. I think about our food supply. Those are all things that go into our long-term sustainability. You're really talking about a macro situation, but there's stuff we can do in Tucson to make ourselves more sustainable. Long-term, there's stuff we can do as far as solar, being proactive in solar, especially specifically rooftop solar. Rooftop solar is probably an unclaimed resource, as well as parking lot solar. Parking lot solar and rooftop solar are probably better than building solar farms. I think that's one piece to it. We should encourage it. We should definitely incentivize it, but we don't need to force it. The market will ultimately take care of itself on that. The second piece is water conservation, water harvesting, water capture, water retention. Those are all beefy words. They all mean we've got to try to be in a situation that even if we lose the CAP, now look, we get 120,000 acre feet from the Colorado River and the Central Arizona Project every year. That's about all the water we wheel to all of our Tucson Water customers, which is great. That means that all the water that flows out of our wells, we're actually able to recharge, put back into the ground. We've been doing that for about 9 years now. We've been doing it partially for the last 25. If anybody remembers the water wars in the late 90s and mid 90s, when Radio Bob Beaudry was on the air, they do know that there were estimates in some places that had we continued growth and we continued higher water use, there was a possibility we only had 20 to 25 years of water less. Some of the doomsdayers back then said 15 years. So right now, even if we turn the CAP off, we probably have north of 60, 65 years of water easy.
Really? That much?
Yep. We've recharged quite a bit over the last—
We'd have that much water?
We have
65
recharged
years of water?
Probably. Again, it's a moving target estimate, but
okay,
we've recharged what we need to recharge.
All right.
That being said, we'd be sucking all the water out of the ground and there'd
sure
be no more. But, and remember, there's about 50,000 acre feet of water that the desert naturally generates for us every year. So,
right,
so you have all those things in mind.
All right, I'm going to take a break right now. We're going to hear about Mona's Danish Bakery. Have you been up there yet, Paul Cunningham?
Absolutely. I listened to your show, and
right,
you got me convinced. And
you sampled it.
I think that, again, I don't know. The white frosting one that looks like a checkerboard, I go for it every time. I can't resist it. And, you know, I should be watching my sugar a little bit, but I just can't help myself.
Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. And Paul's son has now come on to the camera. Folks, I think they can see his son. Why don't you get your son a little closer here?
Kyle.
Yeah. Let's talk about Mona's, though, while we're looking at your son on camera. Mona's located northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Owner and chief baker Steve has done such a great job with all of the breakfast. Paul Cunningham, they're now doing the breakfast. Got the grill in there, so they're doing the hot breakfast. 6:30 every morning they are open for breakfast. My favorite, I'll do the couple of scrambled eggs, the hash browns, and then I go to the bakery case for the almond croissant.
Yeah, the almond croissant is a favorite of my wife's. So
there you go. Mona'sDanishBakery.com. Also, there's a link to Mona's and all of our great sponsors at BuckmasterShow.com. These are partners that make this program possible. Please support them. Be right back with Paul Cunningham.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To learn more, please visit rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
Join hundreds of other Arizona businesses who have chosen to put kids first. The Corporate Tax Credit Scholarship Program's deadline is June 30th. Eligible businesses will receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit. IBE, a school tuition organization, is ready to help. Talk to your accountant today. A one-minute application to IBE and we take care of the rest. IBE works with over 290 diverse schools, awarding 95% of all corporate donations to low-income and disabled students. Deadline, June 30th. azcorporatetax.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We're speaking with Tucson City Councilman Ward 2 Democrat Paul Cunningham. We were talking in the first segment about the self-taxing districts. We got a little bit into water. I know you're very concerned also about this Golf Links corridor, Councilman. What's the bottom line there?
Well,
is that one of the busiest corridors in the city?
It's definitely one of the, yes and no.
53,000 vehicles per day.
Right. It's significant for the east to west travel. The problem is that no one uses Barraza after.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we have this huge drop off in traffic after Barraza. Everybody's been talking about an east to west commute, a quote unquote east to west bypass for years. Right now, Golf Links probably is the most logical piece to that. It may not be perfect. There'll definitely be a few people who will say, well, I want it in my neighborhood. Why are you building it over there? There are definitely people who live over there who will say, I don't want it in my neighborhood. Why don't you build it over there? But as far as the whole kind of the whole traffic flow situation, this corridor from basically Wilmot to Albernon along Golf Links provides us the least invasive opportunity to have through traffic without encumbrances at lights if we choose so to go that route. First of all, we really need a true study to actually verify that idea. I mean, you can't just say, hey, gee, we ought to build a parkway on Golf Links and we'll just do it because we think it's a good idea. We need to actually have some numbers and some traffic load and analyze and see what kind of.
And that's going to happen?
That's what we voted on. So what we did, we already had a study kind of analyzing traffic flow. This added an extra like $9,000 onto the study that we were already paying $340,000 for anyway. But they're going to examine that section of Golf Links Road to say, hey, maybe there's some things we can do differently. And you know, the bad word is grade separated interchanges. That's something that we voted against. And that grade separated interchanges with 15 different off ramps and That's not what we're talking about. Traffic controls and even the versions of grade separated interchanges have evolved over the years. You don't necessarily need to build a full grade separated interchange. You can do something like what are called flyovers, where just through traffic goes through and only two lanes would go through. But if you're not taking a left, you don't have to stop. And so there's some opportunity there. Again, it's a long road. It would take a while. We'd have to leverage money from both the state and the federal government. We couldn't pay for it all ourselves. But I think it's an opportunity to help that commute east to west. It would also lighten the traffic loads at Broadway, which would in turn lighten the traffic load at Speedway and 22nd. So I think there's some opportunity there. It's pretty early in the stage, but for me as an East Side council person, that commute to both the East Side and to the Southwest, where the airport and where the aerospace corridor is, needs to be quicker.
Paul Cunningham is with us on 10:30, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We had Mike Ortega, the city manager, on the program on Friday, and he says that core services will be the focus of the new fiscal year, which opens up, of course, July 1st. You've come up with a budget unlike Pima County, which has struggled a little bit. The first time I can recall that they will not have adopted a budget, Paul Cunningham, at the end of the fiscal year. You'd have to go back. I think someone was saying back when Ann Day was a Pima County supervisor in District 1. So we're talking about it's been many years that there's been this extension. But the city seems to have its act together with this new budget.
Well, I like this budget. I think it's really responsible. It focused on our four services. It's also larger than usual because we've actualized some revenue increases due to the economy within the city limits improving. I think, again, when you look at the city of Tucson, we're unique in that through two different routes, we actually don't have the cooperation at the state and county level that some other cities enjoy throughout the nation. And I'm not knocking the county or state by any means. I'm just saying that it's just not there. I'd like it to improve. I think if we can improve, we can probably find some common goals and work to them. The interesting piece we have is that the county works. There's a state law that's passed that's detrimental to Tucson and Pima County, and Pima County can't really get past that piece of it, and it definitely hurts us, and that is the incorporation piece. I mean, if we just incorporated another 40% or another 200,000 people within Pima County, they don't have to be annexed into Tucson,
mm-hmm.
just in the region,
mm-hmm.
You're talking about $60 million.
Mm-hmm.
Of unclaimed state share, but it would actually be more like 50 because you have to stretch the pie a little bit. But still, that's the type of stuff that we've really got to be talking about if we want to get some of the things done.
Because you look at Maricopa County, 95% of Maricopa County is incorporated.
Right.
You look at Pima County, what is it? I mean,
it's below 65.
It's below 65. That's a tremendous amount of money that is being left on the table.
Yes.
That could be going to this region. So you're saying if we really want to move forward and think about the future of this region, we've got to seriously thinking about incorporation.
I think incorporation is probably what will lead us into the next decade in the 2020s. I think if we have it, we'll have a very successful decade in the region.
Could you see a day where we have metro government here?
No, I think we'd probably still have a combined. I think it's actually better. I think that once you get to a certain square mile area, you can have regional pieces to that government,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
but once you get to a certain square mile area,
mm-hmm.
I think it's really dangerous to just have a full regional government. I mean, that's why LA is LA and Beverly Hills is Beverly Hills and mm-hmm. Phoenix is Phoenix and Goodyear is Goodyear
right.
and Buckeye is Buckeye.
Right.
And if you go around to every major metropolitan area in the country, the reason that they have these separate towns is because at the end of the day, at certain levels,
local voices.
Everybody yeah. has different
neighborhood voices.
Yeah. I deal with it just in Ward 2. Ward 2 is barely 16 and a half square miles, and different neighbors have different needs. And so it's important to have that separation.
But the well, we have tried to incorporate, or we've tried to kind of have a metro government, and some we're sharing services in some areas, right? And there's places where we could do more.
Well, I probably want to do the LAPD model. So LA County, all the towns in LA County have a public safety district.
Right.
They have a public. We could have a public safety fire district for the for the whole metro area of just this part of the county. Yeah. There's all kinds of stuff we can do, but we've got to get everybody incorporated first.
Mm-hmm. All right. Big issue then for the new fiscal year. If you had to pick one issue, what would it be for the city of Tucson for the 2019-2020 year?
The acceleration of our public safety, backfilling our ranks. We've done a really good job. We're going to be at 20 at a time, but I'd really like to get that response for service number down on some of the lower tier calls. I think we can do that.
We're at about 900 still below 900.
Depending on if you officers. Count, it depends if you count the CSOs or not.
Yeah, we could really be up about 1,100 would be ideally, wouldn't it?
Well, the national average is about 16 and 24 per 10,000. We're below 20. I'd like to get us to 20. In order to get to 20, you'd need to have about 1,000 plus 100. So 1,000 dark blues, 1,000 commissioned officers, and 100 community service officers.
All right. Paul Cunningham with us. We try to talk with Mr. Cunningham at least once a month, and hopefully your visit with us in July will again be in studio, because school's not starting until early August, correct?
I always look forward to being able to come into studio. Otherwise, I wouldn't get to visit you, Bill.
There you go. And now you're seeing the new studio. So
I'm loving the new study. Had I known we'd been on camera, I would have dressed up. I actually came from walking and being out and about.
People understand, it's radio, but we still are on TV, which is nice. All right. Paul Cunningham, all the best to you, sir.
Thank you, Bill. Bravo.
All right. Mid-show point on Buckmaster on 1030. The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from the Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies, as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an Ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. A little bump music. Bring it up again, Bob. Bring it up. That's America. And they're coming June the 28th. Desert Diamond Casino. Is that right, Bob? Yeah, okay. That's going to be a great show. America. I wonder if it's the original group or maybe some components of the original group. They had nine albums back in the 70s, like America a lot. It's Buckmaster on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. And today we're kind of launching sort of our experiment here on YouTube. So you can check us out on YouTube and watch the live video stream. With me in studio, one of the contributors to the Buckmaster Show. He's one of our newest contributors. He's Jeff Silvertooth. Dr. Silvertooth is our contributor on agriculture. We're so delighted to have people like Dr. Silvertooth on the team, on the Buckmaster Show team. We've got now over two dozen contributors. These are people who have all sorts of wonderful expertise, Jeff. Good to see you, by the way.
Likewise, thank you.
They have great expertise in a variety of fields, and your field is agriculture. Jeff Silvertooth is the Associate Dean at the University of Arizona College of Agriculture, and you added life sciences. It always used to be just College of Agriculture,
right,
and then life science. What are life sciences?
Well, it's pretty broad, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Yeah. What is that?
That was added into the college name about 20 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And it was because the college was expanding into more of the sort of molecular biology aspects of what is applied to agriculture, both in animals and plant sciences. So the college was experiencing a broad expansion with regard to the scope and the type of science that has been involved with historically. Primarily that life sciences component brings in the relationships of more basic science into the college, particularly in the areas of cellular molecular biology, genetics, biochemistry, as it pertains to the life systems of plants and animals and agriculture.
So it's a really big umbrella.
It's a huge umbrella.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Jeff's other titles, Director of the Extension, Director for Extension and Economic Development, and Associate Director of the Arizona Experiment Station. And I think it's worth talking about that every, let me see if I get this right, Jeff, every land-grant college, and there are university land-grant, and I think there's one for each state, right?
That's right.
And they have this extension service.
Right, right.
Through their departments of agriculture, right?
Traditionally.
Okay.
Right. So there is a land-grant university associated with every state and territory. And within that land-grant structure, there are three prongs to the mission: resident instruction, research, and extension. And extension in the case of the University of Arizona, and they all vary a little bit from place to place, state to state. But in the University of Arizona, extension is the applied and translational research in particularly the agricultural arena, family consumer health sciences, and also 4-H youth development. So we take care of a translational applied research. That's my connection with the experiment station.
Okay.
And then we take that information out into the state. And that's what extension is. It's taking and connecting the university to the state and bringing science to bear on practical problems that are relevant to the state.
4-H has been around forever, Jeff Silvertooth. Is there still interest in agriculture and animals and what do they call that, husbandry or something?
Right.
Is there still interest among young people
Absolutely.
In this area?
Absolutely.
Were you a 4-H'er yourself growing up?
I wasn't,
okay.
Actually,
all right.
not at all.
All right. But go ahead about this interest level.
But the answer to your question, the interest is huge. And it varies a lot from county to county and from parts of counties. So for example, here in Pima County, you would do this in Tucson, run a 4-H program here. You have a much more diverse program beyond the traditional agricultural components. And 4-H consists of basically what we call STEM education, science, technology, engineering, and math education. So what we see today are the traditional programs of agriculture, animals and plants, particularly really well based in rural areas primarily, but they are also involved in the programs in urban areas, Maricopa County, Pima County, for example, but the other parts of the state that are more urban, you see them expanding quite rapidly with regard to other types of science education projects that the youth are involved in. But the principles of 4-H are the same. It's to help the kids get in a more disciplined and directed mode of learning that's outside the classroom, but it complements classroom learning, particularly in the areas of science and technology, engineering, and mathematics. But the idea, too, is with the 4-H program is to teach and to develop independence as well as leadership, as well as and also, too, the things you see that come that emanate from those programs in terms of learning skills is good citizenship and civic operation, civic behavior. And so many times when I go out around the state and I'm working with different entities in the public about our extension programs, they'll say, whatever you do, do things for our kids. And this 4-H program is good. I've had people like juvenile court judges say to me, I don't know what all goes on in 4-H. I wasn't a 4-H-er myself. But whatever it is, it works because those kids, I just don't see them in my courtroom. And the people that you see that are most adamant about our 4-H support are people that have actually experienced it themselves, or someone in their family has. And so it's those types of relevant experiences that keep the program supported, vibrant, and alive. And I can promise you, you go from my job going in the state, you change things in a 4-H program, and people in the community tell you right away whether that's good or bad. And they're very supportive. It's a program, Bill, I'd like to see expanded. It's not only a director of extension, but as a citizen in this state. You know, father and myself of four kids, I can appreciate the importance of doing things for our kids and for the youth and every community. And I really like 4-H, and I'm proud that we have it in extension. And I would just like to see it more broadly distributed. So I appreciate your question. It helps get the word out a little bit.
Well, I'm also curious, what are the H's? What are the 4-H's?
Well, they stand for healthy heart, healthy mind.
Healthy heart?
Healthy heart.
Right.
Healthy mind, healthy body. And what's the fourth one? Okay, healthy thinking.
Healthy thinking.
Right.
Okay, interesting. And it's been around a long time.
They celebrated this centennial in 2013.
Very cool. Yeah. Jeff Silvertooth is with us. He's our contributor on agriculture on the Buckmaster Show. And when we talk about agriculture, I've got a list here, at least half a dozen items. We won't get to all of them today. But we did hear Paul Cunningham, Jeff, talking about water, and that even if the CAP were to be cut off today, and we don't want that to happen at all, we'd be okay water-wise. But we're okay water-wise right now, thank goodness, because we've had a very good water year. One of our contributors is up in Denver. He's our environmental contributor, Jeff, and he checked in with us a week ago. They have had snow like you wouldn't believe in the Colorado Rockies.
And that's true, and it's great to have that. But the thing that's important for us for is that's the watershed. The western part of those Rockies are the primary watershed for the Colorado River system. And we depend on that Colorado River system tremendously in this state. And it's throughout the region. And so this year is important because it helps us. It's one little step. So as I sometimes say, it's one drop in the bucket to try to get us out of this drought.
A 20-year drought.
At least. We're looking about 19, 20 years now, and it's severe. So a lot of folks say, well, we've had this wet year, and it's easy to think that we might be, now the drought's over. Well, it really isn't. It'll take several years like this consecutively to really make a difference in our water storage to capacity totally, or what we have in the bank water-wise. But it takes a pattern of change to really to say that we're out of the drought. But we'll take it. It's been a tremendous benefit to us in many respects.
How is climate change affecting Arizona agriculture?
Well, you know what's happening. You know, Paul Brown, a colleague of mine I've worked with here for over 30 years in Arizona, is a biometeorologist. He runs our Arizona Meteorological Network, AZMET, as we call it, which you can access through our websites, through Extension. And he has weather stations. I think it's about 34 stations scattered all over the state of Arizona.
He's got that many.
Yeah, and he's been collecting data, good data. Paul's a good biometeorologist, collects solid data. And he has over a 30-year data set. And wherever you go in this state with that data set over the past three decades, you can see that the patterns are pretty clear. Of course, there's huge variability every year, and that's just the way it is in nature. But the patterns are clear with the stepwise progression, the increase in temperatures. If you go from the low elevations, like around Yuma, Colorado River Valley, all the way across to Arizona, southern Arizona, to the eastern borders, And the temperature ranges, of course, are different with elevation.
But it's, you're saying those 30-plus stations, there has been a consistency in rising temperatures in Arizona.
Exactly. That's it. That's the point.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. So of course, the temperatures are going to be different, but when you look at where they've been historically, they've been going up.
They've been going up, and that's consistent with the international, the global trends. So it's happening. So going back to your base question, how is that affecting agriculture? When those temperatures go up in a dry climate like this, our water demand in the atmosphere increases. And so you put any plant or animal out in the environment, you and I included, there's going to be a greater demand for water for evaporation. We call it evapotranspiration collectively from a plant and soil system. Mm-hmm. And so that's happening. What we're having to do is just basically adjust in the way we manage crops and animals in this environment as we move along and recognize it's happening. Where the big debate is the biggest element of the debate is about what's the cause.
Right.
Some folks would argue that it's just natural, climate changes anyway. And the geological record shows that's true.
Mm-hmm.
The question then associated with that is how fast? This is fast.
How fast and what can be done?
That's right. Yeah. And what are the other conditions that might be mitigating or creating this kind of a process? And that's pretty clear. There are some distinct relationships in science-based information that is factual, well documented, and the patterns associated with the causes are there as well. But what we have to do with in agriculture is just the fact that it's happening, and we have to deal with it. The drought's here; it's real, you know, and we've had to deal with it.
All right, Jeff, we're going to keep you around for a second segment, but right now, Jeff, I want to tell our listeners about one of our great partners. Jeff, do you know the Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico area?
I do, indeed.
That's one of our great sponsors. We send so many of our listeners over to this area. There's so many recreation opportunities over there. The Gila National Wilderness is there. I think one of America's first national wilderness areas just north of Silver City, Jeff. It's a real pretty drive, too. It's about 45 minutes up to one of our first national monuments, that's the Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument. And what I like to tell people about Silver City, Jeff, is the elevation's about 5,500 to 7,000 feet. So when it's 100 degrees here in Tucson, you're going to get some cooling.
That's right.
And this is a great time of year to go over and sample the area. 3-hour drive from Tucson. Great starting point is their website, southwestnewmexico.org. You'll find the great listing of so many places to stay and so many recreation opportunities. Be right back with Jeff Silvertooth, our contributor on agriculture. If you'd like to join the conversation, 790-2040. Be right back on Buckmaster.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA's Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at sierratucson.com or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance payers.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Jeff Silvertooth is with us talking agriculture. Jeff is our contributor on the Buckmaster Show about agriculture. And here's an appropriate commercial, Jeff. We're going to talk about one of our sponsors, Green Things.
Right.
So there you go. Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Parks. This has really become a nice, almost a destination now in itself. They've got 13 acres right by the Rito River. Everything you need for your garden, all these great plants. But now they also have this merchandise from Zocalo. For years, Zocalo was over by Country Club and Broadway. It's beautiful, handcrafted merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. So not only can you get your plants at Green Things, but shop for some great furniture and gift items at Zocalo Village and their five shops. Their website is greenthingsaz.com. Jeff Silvertooth with us, the Associate Dean at the University of Arizona College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. He's director of for Extension and Economic Development as well. And we were talking in the first segment with Dr. Silvertooth, and I put him on the spot here. Bob, did you know that Jeff did not get the four H's correct? A listener, we stumped Dr. Silvertooth, but a listener called to our attention, Jeff, and you want to clarify, what are the four H's? You get a second opportunity.
All right, we'll try. Yeah, okay. The 4-H folks keep me straight on that right out there. They do a good job at this. The 4-H is a very important part, and I like the way it describes the principles of the program, but the healthy heart, healthy mind, healthy hands.
Healthy hands.
I think one forgot, and a healthy body.
There you go.
So it's a well-rounded approach to healthy living.
We were talking in the first segment about water. We're talking about climate change, and I'm just wondering now, we have this industrial hemp production now going on in Arizona. And I'm wondering, how does water, how does climate, all of these items affect and this hemp production?
That's a great question, Bill. Well, first of all, hemp has become, there's a lot of people think about hemp. It's a cannabis.
Yes.
It's a cannabis plant.
Uh-huh.
And there are, of course, there's the drug cannabis with a THC level greater than 3% is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, cannabis grows wild in a lot of places. Back where I come from in Oklahoma, Kansas, they called it ditch weed.
Mm-hmm.
It's just regular, looks like regular pot,
mm-hmm.
the drug pot.
Mm-hmm.
But now there's a product that can be derived from that, primarily from the fibers. A lot of ropes and a lot of fiber-based products can be derived from the hemp plant, of a type that is non-drug bearing. That's usually less than 3% THC.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been also, too, used for oil production from the seed.
Wow.
And so the state of Arizona, a lot of states are legalizing it now, saying, well, there's an alternative crop. There's a demand for that type of fiber from the hemp plant. And they're saying look at this as an alternate industry. Because a lot of places in the country are struggling agriculturally, economically.
Mm-hmm.
In Arizona, we can grow a lot of things, but it's always having a market.
Yeah.
So some states have begun to legalize it and set this up. The 2018 Farm Bill has made a provision for the legalization of fiber hemp production across the country, which was huge in terms of helping facilitate the production, the commercial production at any given state level. Now, what they require is for the state's departments of agriculture to develop a plan. Our Arizona Department of Agriculture has developed a plan as to how they would manage and control hemp production in Arizona for fiber production, primarily for industrial hemp, they call it. And that plan has to be submitted to the USDA. USDA has to approve that plan. And once that happens, then growers can plant and produce fiber industrial hemp. And, of course, our involvement then from the university is important in relation to this, in fact, due to the fact that we have a federal connection. And we want to make sure that the federal laws are all in place. Now, the Farm Bill, the USDA says it's good by them, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And once the Arizona plan gets approved. The other question that's come up, our attorneys have pointed out, and the people in Arizona have quickly recognized this as well. The Justice Department, the Department of Justice, U.S. Department of Justice, has to also understand and define cannabis industrial hemp versus illegal drug hemp in the same way. Yes,
exactly.
Yeah. And so before our attorneys or Office of General Counsel really give us the green light, because we don't want to jeopardize federal funding for the entire university, because we get ahead of our headlights, so to speak.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So we are holding off right now. We should get approved right away. Looks like the Department of Justice and the USDA are good. And from all indications that we have right now, the plan from the state of Arizona has been approved. And there's hemp production going into fields in Arizona right now. I was just in Graham County yesterday and saw an operation there that's probably, I would guess just by driving by looking at it, it's probably 300 acres plus. Mm-hmm. And it's bedded up. There's plastic mulch on the beds, and I understand they're going to be moving transplants, mm-hmm. Young hemp plants into the field. So it's experimental. It's brand new for us. Now, you go back to the other part of your question about how does that relate to our water management.
Yeah. Is it a water-intensive product?
That's a great question, because we don't know. And this is a great place where we fit in with the industries in Arizona, is when things like this come up, it's a good place for us to do research and answer some of these basic questions, such as there's a myth that's running around out there right now in the state. It's common to say, this is going to be great for us. And it's going to save 30% more water than any other summer crop, like a cotton crop or mm-hmm. corn or mm-hmm. anything else.
We don't know that.
Mm-hmm. We don't know that. But that's one of the first things we need to study. Now, mm-hmm. going back to Paul Brown again, we go back to the Arizona Meteorological Network. We look at the evaporative demand mm-hmm. here in Arizona. You put any plant out there that's going to produce dry matter, it's going to use water. Mm-hmm. There's no way around it. Mm-hmm. So if you say, I want to use less water, we have these water-sucking crops, as people sometimes criticize. You put any plant out there, and if it's going to produce dry matter, you're going to use water.
What's dry matter?
It's like the bulk of the plant.
Oh,
so
okay.
What we harvest off a plant.
Okay.
You grow a corn plant, corn is dry matter.
Okay.
And so it's from...
So it's all water, basically it's all water intensive,
yes,
isn't
sir.
It?
Yes, absolutely. Right. So if you're going to use less water for a crop, one of two things has to happen. Either you're gonna produce less, and that crop you produce better be worth a lot.
Yeah.
Or you move to alternate seasons, mm-hmm. and that's what we're looking at here. We're thinking maybe we can move hemp production, depending on the length of season it requires, into less water demanding seasons like the spring and the fall. Avoid the peak summer demand months, but we don't know that yet either. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of questions that we need to address. And the farmers out there are looking at it. If they think they have a market, they're going to go for it. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of Arizona agriculture. The farmers are progressive, and they figure out ways to do things. So we need to get our clearances so we being the university and extension, so we can start working with these
folks. I've only got about a minute, Jeff, and I'm just wondering, is that to get that harvested, that product, compare it to cotton, what's the cycle like with hemp?
Well, that's good. In terms of the time.
Yeah, time. How long does it take?
We're not sure.
Yeah.
We hope if we can produce two short seasons, we might be able to get, that would be like 90-day seasons. Mm-hmm. You might be able to get two harvests out or two crops a year, but we don't know that for sure.
So is hemp comparable to like cotton as far as a fiber?
Fibers that would come out of hemp would be more like you'd use for ropes and that type of thing.
Okay. But apparently there is this market for it.
There is a market. Right. Therein lies another concern, Bill, is that you have a market, but how elastic is that market? How much production can it take before it saturates and you start dropping the prices?
All right, Jeff, always a lot to talk about with you. Jeff Silvertooth, our contributor on agriculture, with us on the Buckmaster Show. Jeff, I hope you have a great vacation. Get away from the heat for a while and go over to the coast.
I'm going to try to do that. Thank you for having me today,
Thank you very much, Bill. Jeff Silvertooth with us. On behalf of Dr. Silvertooth and Bob Dio, our fine engineer producer, I'm Bill Buckmaster, and we hope you have a great afternoon and evening. We'll be back with you tomorrow at 12:04.